Alright, I'm recording.
I'm going fishing. I'm going fishing. Hook, sinker, and line. I said
there it is. I gotta tell you, I like starting the show with that song. It just kind of gets me in the mood. Fishing Frank here, Robert in the chair across from me, and Captain and Commander RJ up in Control Central and overlooking the minions.
That's a tough job.
Yeah. It is a tough job. Somebody's got to do it, though.
That's right. And just to let you know, isn't God and Fishing going to premiere this Sunday?
It has already premiered.
Ah.
We've Pastor Danny, right?
Donnie.
Pastor mm-hmm. Donnie, he's been on, and I listened to the show. It's a great show.
It's funny, isn't it?
I didn't expect it to be as funny as it was, but it was. I just got a big kick out of him and his approach to fishing and the Bible. And
He's just all in. For God, he's just, like, all in for God. For fishing, he's just like all in for fishing. When Donnie goes about something, or Pastor Donnie, he just kind of just goes for it. But he looks like a pro wrestler. I mean, the guy is huge. And
you can't tell that from his voice.
No, and he's funny. If you haven't listened, Sunday morning, 8:30, right?
That's right.
Tune in Sunday mornings at 8:30 for Pastor Donnie and God and Fishing. You might recognize one or two of the other voices on there.
Yeah, you might.
You might. and Cook and Fish, is that on now?
Cook and Fish premieres this week.
This Friday?
This Friday. Right?
This Friday. Now, if you want some very unusual recipes, this is a recipe show and how to cook show, and it's quite interesting. So, just some of the other shows that are on fishing-wise.
Right, we got Fishy Radio, yep. Which all of us guys hate because it's just women gabbing.
I can honestly tell you, I knew I got that show right when about half the guys I asked about it don't like it at all.
Right, but the women love it.
The women absolutely love this. So if you have a woman or a girl or somebody in your group that is really into fishing, Fishy Radio, and that's F-I-S-H-S-H-E, Fishy. It's a great show for them. I thought there was enough guy shows out there.
That's right.
Needed one for the women, because a lot of women fish. I think, you can't be in our store for an hour and not see a woman walk in the door.
Right. No, there's a lot of women fishermen.
And I think the neat thing about Southwest Florida is how many women fish and their husbands don't.
Oh, that's the funniest part.
When the guy walks in, he goes, she's looking for her stuff. I just drive the boat.
Yeah, yes. I just drive the boat. Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
But there's
right.
a couple of them that don't even do that.
Yeah, they're literally...
They're just there to sun themselves, yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing how many women are just into the fishing and their husbands don't even bother. And it's
and my favorite, though, of all the shows, the new shows that have come in, is Southern Fried Living.
That's an awesome show, isn't it?
I just got the biggest kick out of the two of them. This last
isn't she amazing?
She is. This last show, they talked about blueberries or blackberries, picking blackberries, cooking with blackberries. And then just their whole lives, how it revolves around, finding snakes underneath the blackberry bush and things like that. But it was a funny show.
Now, when is Southern Fried Living on?
Oh, man, you're going to catch me on that. I don't have the schedule in front of me. I will run out at some point once you get gabbing, and I'll go grab it.
So anyway, just some cool new shows on. And I appreciate everybody listening to this show. Thank you so much, behalf of Robert, myself, and RJ. We're very appreciative for our audience, and we have actually a pretty large audience, and God knows why, but I love you for liking it. thank you. All right, Robert, number one fish in the harbor this week.
I've had quite a few reports of the sharks. The little sharks, the small black tips, a few medium-sized lemons, and bull sharks. Because a couple guys been coming in. The weather's been funky, let's face it.
Right.
It's been a little weird, so guys have been able to get out for a couple hours here, a couple hours there, trying to dodge the storms. But down in the southern part of the harbor, and I think a lot of it has to do with our rainfall, has pushed so much fresh water to the... Basically, it's brown water going all the way out through the pass, but your higher salinity is from Cape Hayes and out, so there's almost a boundary marker there with a lot of small bait fish. Still a few Spanish mackerel around, not a lot, but a few. And just the bait is all hanging there, so I think that's what's created those sharks to be hanging out in that whole, 3-mile stretch from Cape Hayes to Boca Grande Pass, kind of, roughly.
And that's not uncommon for this time of year.
No.
To have everything more down there. Now, I like to go, if I'm not really sure what the tide's going to be when I'm going, okay, I just want to leave, I'm going to go shark fishing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to head off of Cape Hayes. Now, on your charts, you're going to see some little depressions, some lines in there, and which signify depressions, a little bit deeper areas off of Cape Hayes. Now, what I'm looking for is somewhere between Bull Bay, Turtle Bay, and Boquilla, out in that middle. And for some reason or other, wherever you see on the chart, if it's an average of, say, 12 foot, you can find a 14-foot spot. A lot of that little bit deeper areas are gravel bottom. It's very easy for the fish to find prey there compared to the mud bottoms. Wherever you have a mud bottom, you usually got other stuff and even plants and stuff, so it's very hard for the fish to see prey in that. But once that prey starts going across the gravel, crab, shrimp, whatever, they can get to it.
Yeah.
It's a very easy ambush point.
Absolutely.
So you get a lot of sharks right in there. And the nice part about that kind of an area, it's between marker 5 and marker 4. Now, I usually fish over by marker 6. But between 5 and 4 is a really nice area for catching sharks, whether the tide's incoming or outgoing. Because outgoing tide, you're chumming towards Boca Grande Pass. Incoming tide, you're chumming over towards marker 6. You've got salt water on both sides of you. You're in that area where the sharks are going to be, whether the tide's coming in or going out.
Right. No, that's very true. And I think the other thing that kind of gets overlooked a little bit is, you know, you talk about that transition of 12 feet to 14 foot with a gravelly bottom. Is the gravelly bottom actually also usually signifies where there might be a little bit stronger current base that's preventing that sediment from settling down there, so you get a little bit better water flow along that spot that can create more nutrients and stuff like that.
Could there be something at the top of that hole that maybe swirls the water different there?
Could.
I mean, there might even be like a sunk boat or a structure or something in that area that prevents the dirt from settling there. It creates a backwash, a swirl.
Yeah. No, absolutely, it could. And there's some weird bottom out through that whole area, especially
speaking
like
of which,
that marker four.
Weird things. I got a flood alert on the TV this morning, and I'm just looking, and the Peace River is, let's see, 3.5 feet above flood stage.
So, and
it's 13.5.
And
flood stage 11. No, it's 2.5 feet.
2.5 feet.
2.5 feet above flood stage out in Arcadia.
That's pretty significant.
That's a lot of water flowing
That's
down. We have 6,150 cubic feet per second. The average is 1,300. And you know how they say climate change? Well, it was worse back in the 40s and 50s because in 1949, there was 7,500 cubic feet per second. But the average for this time of year is 1,350, and we're at 6,000.
That's crazy.
Yeah, there's been a lot of storms in the interior of Florida right now.
You tell us you got an alert from the National Weather Center?
Yeah, we did. And we've been getting them regular now. There were water spouts yesterday off of Clearwater, and a couple of them did come ashore, so we got the emergency alert for that also. So there's been some pretty rough weather in the
area. The mighty WKDW, the mighty KDW, You guys are like a regular weather source here too, right?
Yeah, that's right, because we get all the NOAA weather alerts, and plus we get some more detailed stuff that you don't normally hear on the television and commercial radio, because we run it all through.
So you guys do a lot more in-depth radio here at WKDW.
Right, yes.
I don't know why, but
you don't have to edit it out because of time, as much time constraints. We have a lot more free range.
I just gotta say, if you worked at this radio station, for some reason or other, you walk in the door, you think WK out of Cincinnati.
Yeah. Yeah, we are gonna have the Thanksgiving turkey drop.
Yes.
Nice.
We're living it, boys and girls.
Going, yeah. Anyway, as far as weather alerts are concerned, the way our system is set up is we allow the Weather Service direct access to the transmitter. So anything that comes across the Weather Service that's an alert level thing, comes out on our radio. We don't pre-screen it and then put it out later.
Well, that's good. So if you have times of troubled weather, tune in to WKDW. So the sharks down there, now these sharks are not like bonnet sharks. They're more meat-eating sharks for as far as they want fish.
Correct.
They're not going after shrimp and whatever, whatever. These are fish eaters.
Yeah.
Now, the way I like to do it is I go, I put my anchor out, and then the next thing I do is put my chum bag out. And if you, like me, I don't like doing the chum and then putting it in a bag and having to clean the bag and do all that. I just buy the disposable one. It's chum already in the mesh bag. You tie it off to your boat. But now the secret to it is, if you tie it off and you let it lay flat on the water, like on a string hanging out the back, it won't come out of the bag.
No.
It does not work very well at all.
No.
And we almost were not going to sell it because it just didn't seem to work. And when it was coming out of the bag, it attracted a lot of fish. But getting it out of the bag, you literally had to stand back there and grab the rope and shake it, shake it, shake it. Then I discovered if you tie it off very tight to the boat so it's actually hanging straight up and down, not laying flat on the water, usually about half to two-thirds in the water, half to a third out of the water, every time your boat rocks with a wave, it dips the bag. Every time you walk back and forth, it dips the bag. Anything happens, it's always getting chum out. And it's very effective. It works really well. Now, if I'm taking family and stuff out, I've got a regular chum bag on one side, and then on the other side, I tie a second bag, or maybe even at the front of the boat, where it has the anise oil in it.
Okay. And you notice a difference with it, or are you just trying to mix things up?
I think I'm just trying to cover everything. I'm not really sure if sharks, now, bass, snook, trout, redfish, all attracted to sweet stuff, you know, especially
right.
Bass. It's well documented. Anything very sweet or very salty, they seem to have like the same taste as we do. Sweet and salty works good for them. And we know snook are kind of the same thing. We've seen that many, many times. But sharks, I don't know. Are they attracted to the sweet and salty stuff the way some of these other fish? I don't think anybody's ever done a study on it.
Not that I'm aware of. I mean, because I know guys that brine their bait before they go out sometimes for shark fishing, whether it's sardines or ladyfish or anything like that. And the handful of guys that I've talked to haven't noticed any significant jump in their bite ratio.
I think if you consider what broad-range garbage feeder sharks are, from anything from chunks of dead on the bottom to live flowing, I don't think they have a real good strong sense of taste.
No, I don't think so.
No, I have to say the best shark chum that I've heard of, and a couple of people have told me this, is you go to the grocery store to the cat food aisle, and you find the cans of cat food that are the size of a, you know, tomato soup can. And you look for the ones that have tuna in them. And you take it and you punch a hole in it, run a string through the hole, and then you punch a whole bunch more holes in the can and you drop that over the side and the sharks will find their way to you. And I think it's the fish oil that's in.
The number one bait chum for bait fish, grouper, snapper, anything I've ever seen is a mixture of Cozy Kitten cat food.
Yes, I've heard that.
Cozy Kitten is a horrible brand of cat food. It's greasy. It's not, I don't know if it'd be, it's probably very healthy for a pet. That's what they eat. But, you know, it is literally just nasty mess in a can. It's the reason I learned to throw a cast net. I had to invent a system because when I first started throwing cast nets, you always put it in your teeth to throw it. And that was the only way anybody ever did it. And then with that cat food we were using for the bait fish chum and all this, you had the cat food on your hand, you had the muck and slime from the bottom where you're grabbing the net, you'd put that net up in your mouth and you're tasting this god-awful cat food. So I invented this wing one-arm throwing thing so that you could throw a cast net without putting it in your teeth, just because it was so disgusting to throw a cast net.
Yeah, when you go buy the cat food, you buy the cheapest stuff you can find on the shelf.
Oh, yeah, the cheaper it is, the better it works for chum.
Yeah.
The more expensive cat foods, I don't even know if they're as good for your cat because they don't have the amount of oils in them, but they try to have more meat and less grease and fat and stuff in them.
Yeah, well, it's the grease and the fat that brings the sharks up to the boat. So.
No, absolutely.
But as far as the licorice scent, I don't know if that actually works with the shark or not. But like I say, if I really need to catch sharks, I've got a bag of each out.
Right. And see, and that's another valid point with chum in general, because I actually had a gentleman in today asking about the chum. And he asked if it's going to help him. And I said, well, it's always the one thing I can for sure say about chum, no matter what species you're using it for, I've never seen it hurt the fishing.
I've seen it where really catching fish put chum out and stop catching fish.
Correct. And, you know, I've never seen that happen. You know, I've seen where it didn't really help, where the day was already slow and you put the chum out and it really didn't help accelerate things. But I've never seen where it turns fish off or anything like that, regardless of what kind of chum it is. You know, and I've had guys use it on the flats for using it to try to attract redfish and trout to the area, and other guys who use it, you know, in 100 feet of water for grouper and snapper. Never seen it where it made things worse. So it will do nothing but help.
Yeah, it's like walking down the street. I always go back to one of my first jobs. I was working at the Plaza restaurant uptown up north. And Joanne, the woman who owned the restaurant, she would shut off the exhaust filters over the, you know, you had the big grill and the deep fryers and stuff. And we'd have people in the restaurant, but nobody buying food. So she turned off the exhaust fans and had me slice a sausage link in half and set it with a press on the grill. And without the air going outside, without it exhausting the air, that smell of that would go through the restaurant. And all of a sudden somebody goes, hey, can I get a burger over here? You know, and all of a sudden the food orders would start coming in. You kick on the exhaust fan and go to cooking. And she made a lot of money doing that. So human chumming works pretty good, too.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So, but the best area to find sharks out of a boat right now is going to be somewhere between Cape Hayes and Boquilla in that stretch of there, I tend to call the straits, because from Boca Grande Pass, it goes straight over towards Bernstorff. Now, is there a place, Robert, you think you can walk up to and find these sharks?
Honestly, no. Not with real much consistency, because a couple guys have.
About Middle Beach or something like that?
No. A couple guys have been trying, but honestly, the last place I heard of somebody doing okay with a couple land-based spots was, pardon me, the Boquilla Pier, and then one guy down in Sanibel fishing off the seawall down there.
Yeah, if you're not sure where those are, go to fishingfranks.com, maps of where to go fishing. Yeah, look them up by the thing.
Those are the only two spots I've heard of. Yeah, so unfortunately, it's been a little tough on the land-based part of it for sharks. And the other thing people need to also do is look up the new FWC regulations that they've come out with sharks. It took into a place July 1st.
Right.
You know, I don't agree. We can get into the politics of it.
That's only if you've got 4-foot leaders on. If you're using a little leader and all that, you're really not in that enforcement. regulation.
Correct, but if you're going to do land-based fishing, you should still at least read up on it just so you're aware of the things about it. Just
I think
to cover
ignorance
your bases.
Is bliss. I'd rather ask forgiveness.
As he writes you the ticket.
I don't know if the, you know, with a new law like that, and most people don't know anything about it, I think you're going to see a lot of warnings for the next year.
I think so, too.
Unless
FWC's been pretty good about that.
Usually they're very proactive with stuff, but if the person's got an attitude, don't be surprised.
That's right, yeah.
It really has to do with the person's attitude.
I find that with any law enforcement, it depends on your attitude as to how you're going to get treated.
You know, you see some of these people, watch the video, the cop walks up, they're, you know, hammering on them, blah, 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 and cussing and being rude to him instead of you saying yes sir, you know, and no sir, and then the cop does his thing and goes away.
Show a little respect and you'll get respect back.
But I think that it works
life.
For all of us, though. I mean, you come up to me, give me a bunch of mouth and attitude, you're probably going to get one.
Right.
You know, I mean, I don't think it's any different for any human.
No, not at all.
Show each other a little respect and everything will work fine.
Absolutely.
Getting into, we have... this time of year, people don't think about fishing up the Peace River or the Mahaka River because it's all flowing with fresh water.
Yes.
So we just talked about it, the river's at flood stages.
4.5 times the water flow.
The Mahaka River's at flood stage. The Peace River's at flood stage. Why would you go up there and fish? All the fish are there in the winter.
Right, usually.
Well, that's the myth. That's the legend. That's the urban belief. Now, what have we learned, Robert?
Well, the fish don't know this.
Did you get the electroshocks therapy version of this?
Yes. Yeah, exactly. You know, fish don't know the same rules we know, but they've done studies over the years where they've gone up there with the biologists doing exactly what you just said, you know, electroshock. That's how they do a lot of population senses of fish, where they'll a small charge in the water and stun fish, pull them out, sample them, see what's up there. And this time of year, it's very common for a lot of those snook that bred in June and July to have already migrated into the upper harbor, into the rivers, and mostly into the mouths of the rivers. But they'll catch, you know, 40 plus inch snook, tarpon.
There are guys
redfish.
Out there right now saying that they're consistently seeing snook in the 50-inch range up on the Peace River.
I want to see a picture of that.
That's what I said.
I'll go with the 40-45-inch, but I want to see a 50-inch.
He was very excited. Yeah. And I think if he talked to the next person, it would have been in the 60-inch range.
Right.
But,
but nonetheless, still
River
a 40-inch plus
River.
Snook is still amazing.
But you got the Mayaka and the Peace both with big fish in it this time of year.
Yeah.
The trick is big chunk of dead bait.
Yes.
Now there's tarpon up there. There's snook up there.
The bigger redfish. Not a lot, but the few that are up there have been quality size. You know, high 20s, low 30s.
Now, are we free lining a big chunk of bait out for them?
I think it's going to depend on the spot that I'm at, because you know how it is. In some spots in the river, you can get into some of those bends and you'll get those eddies that'll form. And if you can get into one of those eddies, a lot of times you can freeline that bait and it'll slowly settle itself down on the bottom. But if you're in a weird bend of the river and it's just a continuous current, a lot of times it's going to bring it up way too high in the water column, and at that point you're fishing for gar.
Okay, so in other words, if you can't find a slow place where the water's still or slower, you're going to have to throw a sinker on.
Yeah.
Now, I'm going to say a couple ounces, 2 to 4 ounces of lead if you're in that kind of current, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's going to depend. But, yeah, I mean, I would say at least 2, definitely.
Or, you know, we've got those sinkers that kind of look like a pyramid. They're kind of A-framed with the little things on them. I think I would put a 3-way swivel on, put one of those on a short leash, and then probably about 3 or 4 feet off to my bait on a leader.
Yeah, that would work extremely well. I like that idea.
Because what I'm thinking...
Basically, you're using essentially what they would consider a river rig. You know, that's what they use all over the United States for big catfish, sturgeon, and salmon, with that 3-way swivel with your sinker on the bottom. And running the bait off behind it, and that would work really well. And with that A-frame sinker that we've got,
it's got the little things on it like to dig into the bottom with.
Yeah, it was actually designed for beach fishing, but it works very well in our sandy sediment type river system because it's got a hole in the center of it. It looks just like an A, but at the bottom of that, the legs of the A, it's actually got feet that stick out like little prongs. So it drags and digs in, and then the sand actually pours through the hole of the A and gets it to bite just that much better without having to use an extremely heavy sinker. If you're using an egg sinker, you might need 4 ounces of lead to
so
get it to
that,
hold in place.
You might be able to get away with an ounce or something like that. You wouldn't maybe need to go 2, 3, 4 ounces. You could probably get away 1 to 2 ounces.
Exactly.
Because of the different style.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so I'm going to say probably 30-pound braid, maybe 40.
Yeah, I'm kind of a chicken, so me personally, I'm going to probably I'm going to use my tarpon gear because you never know what's going to hit. It could be a 20-pound tarpon to a 150-pound tarpon to a 6-foot bull shark to a 30-pound snook. I'm gonna play it on the safe side.
All right, let's say
that's like my once in a lifetime fish. I want to hit them.
A 15 to 25 rod, a 5,000 reel, 50-pound braid, and we've tied a 3-way swivel on the end of the line. Mm-hmm. Off of one end, I'm tying my A-frame sinker onto that, and then on the other loop of that, I've got my leader on.
Yes,
now, I'm gonna go probably about 3.5 feet.
Yeah, that's probably about what I would stick with.
Because I can reel that 3-way up towards the tip, and with a 7, 7.5-foot rod, I'm only going to have, 3.5 feet sticking down. But I'm not that tall, casting 4-foot a leader is a lot more of a problem than people think.
Oh,
if you have anything behind you,
I
mean?
No, it's not fun.
So the closer to 3-foot I can get, the better. But I'm gonna judge between 4-foot being a pain and 3-foot being a little short, go to 3.5-foot of leader. So now I'm going to cut a 4.5-foot chunk of leader because by the time I put a knot at each end of it, the hook on one end, tying it to swivel on the other end, I've shortened it up to about 3.5-foot.
Yeah. And what pound test line are you going to use for your leader?
I'm going to go 60.
I agree with that. That's kind of
my river's kind of muddy, murky. I don't think going to 60-pound mono or fluorocarbon is going to affect the bite?
No, I don't think so either.
All right, what did we decide for bait?
Personally, I'm going to probably use mullet.
So you got to
be my first
chunk
choice
of mullet or a piece of whole mullet, like a whole finger mullet?
I'm actually probably going to use a whole mullet cut in half.
Okay, so half
like
a mullet,
old
a
school
2-pound mullet, whack it right in half.
Yeah.
Head half or tail half?
I'm going to start with the head half.
Okay. RJ, your preferred bait, bottom?
Sardine.
Whole Spanish sardine?
Yeah. Again, oily, stinky. You're in kind of muddy water. The fish have got it. They're going to find it by scent first, and then they're going to see it. So I'd go with
no.
I'd
I would
go
with that.
Something stinkier.
As long as I tore the belly up.
Yeah.
If you
exactly
don't
right.
open the fish up to be able to get the smell out, it's encapsulated so much, I just don't think you'd get the smell out of it.
Yeah, I'd definitely open it up or get run a couple of slices through it.
I like having the whole sardine on, but I'm going to cut the belly a little bit or just take my fingers and rip it so that I can get some of that belly stink out of there.
Yeah.
So, all right. So, Robert, what size hook have you got? We've got the 50-pound braid, 3-way swivel, our sinker tied off on a line off onto that, and then we got 60-pound mono coming back. You got this big chunk of mullet. What size hook?
I'm going to use either a 7-0 or an 8-0, and as much as I hate to say it, I'm going to use a circle hook more than likely on that.
VMC's got a new one coming out we should get samples of soon. This is going to be I'm hoping, I helped design it. We'll see how the reality comes from the paper drawings, but it's specifically for that with a much bigger gap in it.
Yeah, but we don't have that yet, so I don't care about that.
Okay.
But I'm still going to stick with VMC. Must stick with either the VMC or the owner.
I would go to I like that one big old Mazda, but with the owner, you can get that kind of Cayley bend one.
Yeah.
And that's got a nice cap
light
on it, too.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
the Mutu Light's too small for what you're doing.
But they make a Mutu, not a Mutu Light. They make
But just a Mutu circle?
Yeah, it's a little heavier.
Yeah.
So either one of those I'm going to use because it's a little beefier, but it's got just the gap's borderline pain in the butt putting a bait on. But the only reason why I'm going to use that circle hook is just because you got so many weird currents in there sometimes, and sometimes the bite is so subtle from a big snook on those big dead baits that it's hard for me personally to tell when you get a good take from one of those.
So what size are we talking about? How big? 20-aught?
No, I'm only going to use like a 7-aught or a 9-aught.
In a circle?
Yeah.
I would have thought at least a 14-aught just to get through the lips of the fish.
Yeah, no, I'm going to probably still stick with that. I mean, that 14-aught would be a great one because I forgot about that one because that's what we're making some of our new leaders out of.
I would say at least a 14-aught on a circle because yeah. You've got a mullet on there. That's a big, that mullet's, you know, you can't even put your fingers around it.
Right.
So if you don't have a 6 or 7 on the circle, I'm sorry, you're never going to catch a fish.
I didn't say a 6-aught. I said a 7 or an 8.
Yeah, but even
you're making it smaller.
I'm just saying
it's not that cold out.
You got to go to a 14-aught in a circle. So,
yeah,
I'm going to disagree. I think you're wrong.
But only if it's in the VMC. You know, I mean, I'm going to be specific on the brand because that is a good size hook. But circle hooks are so screwy with their sizing. I like to.
Well, VMC and Owner are almost identical.
Exactly, and they almost match to a J hook as far as their sizing goes. So
Mustad makes it so much easier. Gamagatsu is not the same, but VMC and Owner are almost identical on their hooks.
Yeah, so it just makes it easier for picking out that right size hook if you want to go to the circle hooks. You know, and I also, if those fish take with that bigger bait, you have to let them swim for a little bit, too, sometimes to let them
get
it.
Are you just
going to
leave your drag engaged and hold on to the rod?
No.
Or are you going to use a dual drag live liner so he can take off, click, 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 click?
Yeah, I'm going to let him swim with it for a little bit before I hit him.
So you either got a conventional with a clicker on it, or you got a live liner reel with this dual drag switch, bait
right
runner, live liner, bait feeder.
Yeah, I like personally the bait feeders, but I do have both, so I'm probably going to use both, you know, to increase my odds.
Yeah, all right, RJ, you've got 50-pound braid, 3-way swivel. We've got 1.5 asinker off it. We got 3.5 feet of 60-pound monofilament leader. What hook are you using with your sardine?
I avoid circle hooks as best as I possibly can. I agree with Robert, it's a whole lot easier to get a hook up with a circle hook, especially in current like that. But I'm gonna go with a J hook, and I'm not big on 4-aught.
Well, with the sardine, I'm gonna agree with you on your 4-aught because that sardine is not a really big around fish.
Yeah.
So that's gonna be a nice size. You're gonna get you can get into the bait, come back out with a lot of hook still out of the bait. You don't need that massive hook on that.
Right, and it also depends on how you hook that bait up. If you're gonna run the J hook just behind where the dorsal fin is on the sardine, so you're kind of hooking them in the middle, or you hook them through the tail, because the fish is gonna grab them from the head first. So if you're hooking it in the lips and you're gonna let them run a little bit, he's going to do some major swallowing of that, and you're going to hook him deep. And I don't know if you necessarily want to do that. So I think if you hook it towards the back end of the bait, and you let him run a little bit, you're more likely to get him in the lip or the jaw.
All right, now I'm going to go with that, but I'm going to have to change something on the rig. Somewhere on that rig, because we're fishing in a current, if you hook the bait in the middle of the bait, it's going to tend to helicopter on you. And if you hook them by the tail, again, you got a lot of helicoptering. So what I would do is on the 50-pound braid coming down to the 3-way swivel, the A-sinker tied off the one side. But when I made my leader, I would put that J-hook on the one end, and I would put a ball-bearing snap swivel onto the 3-way swivel. Now, with that ball-bearing snap swivel, it's going to hold that rotation more between the 3-way swivel and the bait, allowing that bait to do whatever it wants to do, but not mess up my braided line.
Right, and I think one of the things you'll see if you don't put that swivel on, and it's gotta be ball bearing, because it's gotta be able to spin very freely, is the line's gonna wrap around the 3-way.
Yeah, it's and just that, gonna twist makes, up
it
like
an,
a.
It makes an incredible mess, and it's also a good way to lose a big fish because now you got the three-way that's gonna act like a cutter.
Yeah.
To cut that line. So.
I think the hardest thing for people to understand is that just because it says swivel doesn't mean it's gonna swivel.
Exactly right.
If it's metal on metal, metal against metal doesn't swivel when there's any pressure on it.
That's right.
And the pressure of a bait coming back and a current like what we're talking about, you need a ball bearing swivel, and I tie it to the end of my leader and clip it to the three-way snap. We've already got a sinker there. We've already got a three-way swivel there. This other little bit isn't going to matter, but it cannot be a barrel. It has to be a ball bearing snap. A barrel swivel is metal on metal contact. Ball bearing is ball bearing, you know, ease of movement. So I'll go along with your rig, your hook. I like the sardine idea, and I kind of like where you're going with hooking it through the back or the tail. But if I add the ball bearing swivel, I'm all in on it.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. You know, this can be done from land, can be done from a boat. You just walk up by someplace, chunk it out there.
Sure, absolutely. I mean, there's enough fish, you know, of the tarpon and the big snook down along the intercoastal where you can go out there to Placida. The Venice jetties have got some incredible fish going on up there, especially in the evenings. And
I would
evenings,
think up by the 41 Bridge in Northport, there, mm-hmm. I think there's a couple places to get down. I got to drive up there and look.
Yeah, it's
used
been too,
to be, but I don't know if there
yeah,
is
it's
now.
Been too long for me to say possible.
Up in Fort Ogden, the 760 Bridge up there, mm-hmm. All the way up by Arcadia on Highway 70 and the big park up there.
Yeah.
These rigs would be fine up there.
Absolutely.
Now, I'm going to say if you want that big fish, big snook, you're going to have to do this from about an hour or two, say 2 hours before sundown through the night to about 2 hours after sunrise.
Yeah, yeah, definitely in most of those places, whether you're land-based or boat-based fishing, that's going to be your better time frame for those bigger fish. Because even if the, even with the water as murky as it is, those big fish didn't get big being dumb. And at night, they tend to let their guard down just a little bit more, so you stand a much, much better chance. And then also for the land-based people fishing for that stuff at night, you've waited long enough for where the traffic has started to slow down, both foot traffic, car traffic, bicycle traffic. Just in general, all the above-the-water noises have settled way down that are not affecting those fish underneath the water.
What's amazing is the difference on my TV volume.
Mm-hmm.
I go out on the porch to have a smoke and a coffee first thing in the morning, and I can have the volume way down, you know, on the TV.
Right.
I don't have to use my headphones. I can turn the volume down. I can hear it. At 6 o'clock at night, I have to wear the headphones because I can't hear the TV at that same volume.
Yeah.
And it's nothing changed. It's just 12 hours later in the day, no way you can hear it. There's so much background noise that we, I think, tune out of our heads.
Yeah.
You know it from all your recording, RJ. If you're in the middle of the day, it's much quieter to get that nice not background sound than you come in at, you know, 11 o'clock at night. There's no noise.
That's right.
Five in the morning.
Yeah. And that noise, especially on the rivers like that, makes a big difference to the fish bite. And, you know, two things are going on, I think. One, in the daylight, they're more exposed to their predators. And at night, they're less exposed. And also, there's just less noise. There's less things to disturb them and get them to hide and not eat, you know, not venture out to eat something.
I think it's easier to distinguish between a noise that could threaten them and just a lot of other noises going around.
Exactly right, yeah.
So, armored catfish is something a lot of people are seeing.
Especially up on the rivers.
And the Placostomus. And this is a true, pretty nasty invasive fish. Mostly people don't like it because of how it lays its eggs. It'll dig a hole in the side of the river or lake that goes in about 18 inches, and that's where it wants to lay its eggs. So you're walking along the side of the river, and all of a sudden you step down into this hole. It's a pretty good sized hole, several inches around. It goes in 18 inches, 20 inches into the side of the bank. And you step in it, fall down, it's, you know, like stepping in a gopher hole.
Yeah, you've created a hollow spot on the bank that you just can't see from above. And, you know, guys will break ankles or just simply lose their balance and fall right into the water after falling in the hole.
Yeah, it's pretty dangerous for as far as minor, let's say mostly minor injuries. But the one thing about it, if something's going along and digging about 18 inches into the side of a bank or a river or the bank of a lake, well, you put enough holes in one spot and all of a sudden bank collapses.
Yeah, it's causing some serious erosion issues.
Yeah.
This is the same fish you can buy at the pet store, right?
And put the Plecostomus.
Yes, I have one, not knowing better. I wanted a freshwater tank, and I bought one because they called it an algae eater.
And that's what they are.
Yeah, they're algae eaters, and he was about, 2.5-3 inches long at best. He's coming up on 1 foot long now. He's got his own tank. And what I'm going to tell you is don't let him go in the river. You know, let him get big enough and eat them.
Well, I checked into that. The only known recipe for them is to cut the heads and the fins off. Cut the head off, cut all the fins off. Gut the fish, get all the guts out of them. Then boil it, and once you boil it, you can peel the skin off.
Okay.
And I guess it's the meat then is used for like fish stew or something, fish soup.
Yeah.
With lots of curry.
Yeah, or curry,
And it says, don't remember to put in the curry. And right after that it says, and don't forget the curry.
Right, yeah. I would say, don't buy this from the pet store. It's a huge mistake.
Well, it's okay, but if you're going to get them from the pet store to keep your tank clean, understand you are going to kill this fish when it gets older.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
This is not a fish you can let go somewhere and not. You're guilty of horrible crimes at this point to your neighbors and to yourself.
And these guys grow to be about, 2 feet long, 2.5 feet long?
Yeah.
Oh, something like that. They're big.
Yeah, they get big. And when we talk about the hole is 18 inches deep into the bank, but it's probably about 6 or 8 inches around.
Oh, easily.
Easily. And so that's a quick way of making all the banks on the river start to collapse.
Yeah, and it makes the lakes and the rivers shallower and wider.
Right, and also they eat everything.
Well, that's the thing people don't get. Well, it's an algae eater. Well, there's tons of documented evidence where they've eaten, guy was fishing on the bottom for catfish, and they've eaten worms. They've eaten dead minnows, crickets. And the one thing about it, I think it's like the carp, because it's probably a relative of it, big round sucker mouth and all that. So let's say a similar species.
They have similar habits.
Similar characteristic.
There you go.
And they go along and if it got on a thing of bluegill eggs or bass eggs, it might not be there, I'm going to go eat these eggs. But if it's over them and they're okay. They're just going to eat.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, if you got them in your tank, you can buy shrimp pellets for them.
Yeah.
So they're eating everything, and that's the problem, is they get out into our rivers, and they eat all the fish eggs. And
they don't go after the minnows or the bait fish. They're not a predatory fish. But just going along the bottom, and it would be better if it was a predatory fish, going after minnows and stuff like that, trying to eat the young. Because how many eggs could one of those just suck up? Let's say it ate 500 fish by eating eggs.
That's right.
You eat 500 eggs, you ate 500 fish.
Yeah, don't put them in a river.
Yeah.
No, definitely not.
They're actually worse for as far as other fish populations than, say, a Mayan cichlid, which would eat minnows and fry from other ones. Mm-hmm. But it's probably going to eat one or two at a thing, not like a Plecostomus, which gets over the nest, sucks in 500 eggs.
Right, exactly. You know, and they are not a predator, obviously, by their mouth shape, but they still are opportunistic feeders. Like you said, they're still going to eat some of the dead or dying prey items that are going to float down a river because they're still in the catfish family, which is going to take on anything it possibly can. But, and that's why a lot of people are finding them in their crab traps right now up and down on the Peace River and the Mac River and even a lot in the Port Charlotte canals and the North Port canals. They're finding them in them.
here's the good thing about finding them in your crab traps. So when you get them in your crab traps, take them out, throw them on the deck, and put them up there. And then before you put your crab back in the water, chop them in half, throw those in your bait bin. They make good bait for crabs.
Absolutely.
Just take a big old butcher knife or, you know, garden shears or something, whack them in half, and toss them right back in the crab trap.
Yep.
Half them up, but you have to open them up. You can't just throw that in your crab trap. It's got a hard outer shell. It's not going to create the right thing for the crabs. You want to cut them in half, slice the belly open, whatever. But you got to get them so that they're actually going to be an attractant.
Yeah.
Now, almost every article I read on the armored catfish for coming in, because they're not really a game fish, but everybody said they have no natural predators, they're going to take over and everything else. It's all eco-nut, climate change, global warming type, you know, the sea is going to cover us up, whatever. The problem with it is they never gave it time for other fish to learn to eat it. So for several years, that was true.
Right.
But right now, snook, tarpon, largemouth bass, they're all eating this.
Right.
It's become a main food source.
And in the last, I don't even know how many years, but that same electric thing that they're doing to study the fish as far as populations, that's how they're finding out that these fish are eating them, because when they bring up
the fish, the fish float to the surface.
Correct.
Right? They use electricity. Fish float to the surface. They pick them up in landing nets.
And then they have little live wells on the boat, and they can actually sit there and keep the water in, or the fish in water, so it doesn't perish because it's got nice moving water over it. That stunned fish starts to come back to life. But in doing so, a lot of these fish are regurgitating some of their meals.
Well, they actually stuff a water tube down their throat.
Well, that's when they actually want to intentionally examine their stomachs.
Right, but they'll actually put a water line down into their stomach and flush their food out to see what they've been eating.
Right, and I think how they found it first, though, was actually just the fish were puking it up. And then they started really studying it in the last several years, finding that they're eating them. And eating them in ready numbers. And there's two species of armored catfish that we have here. The one is the Plecostomus, which is the most destructive of them all. And then we have the other one's a hoblo catfish, which stays smaller. But all of our predatory fish are feeding on both species in good, good numbers, which is a good thing. You know, Mother Nature finds its way to help try to control the situation. It'll never correct the destruction that we've done by introducing different things to this environment, but it'll always still try to find a way to at least help balance it out a little bit.
All right, now I'm going to go through, because just the way I am, and I'm thinking to myself, well, because we introduced it, nature does the exact same thing as what humans do. Carries fish from one body of water to another body of water via the feet of different birds. An osprey will go down, grab a fish, and all of a sudden you've got a saltwater fish that this osprey was carrying along in its talons. It wiggles, the osprey drops it, and lands in a pond instead of the harbor.
Right.
I mean, nature does the same thing as humans. It's just, it doesn't do it as fast as we do.
Well, and it doesn't bring one animal from one continent to another. That's probably where some of these problems come into play.
Well, I'm not going to say. I'm just saying we're not that different than what nature itself does.
Definitely not.
But it just, when you see, you know, these effects, you always got to stand back and give it a bit.
Yeah.
By a bit, I mean a few years. You know, oh my God, this is horrible. It's ending civilization as we know it. It's not a Democrat. It's probably not going to do that. And, you know, you just have all these little things that these fish will do. But given time, things will get better, which means there's hope for them, too. So, you know, I'm hopeful for the world. Mayan cichlids.
Yes.
Good bait?
Great bait.
Tell me about it.
Well, you can catch them. They're great eating also, but you know there's so many of them moving down out of the rivers right now too, that you're catching them on little pieces of shrimp.
Be specific. Who's catching it? What's going on?
The crab trap's catching the Mayan cichlids.
Okay, your crab trap caught a Mayan cichlid.
And my girlfriend, I told her, I said, put it on for bait. You know, you'd be surprised. You know, snook eat a lot of these snapper and other things that are swimming around that same size, about 5 or 6 inches long. She wasn't sure, so she put it on the hook, and 20 minutes later.
Did you dorsal hook it or nose hook it?
Nose hooked it.
So you put it crossway through the nose, about a 4-aught hook.
Yeah.
And you just toss it out and let it swim?
Yeah, just toss it out and let it freeline. Kind of, we have a little bit of mangroves right by our dock, about 15 feet away, and it's right on a corner, so there's some oyster rocks along the seawall, too. And it creates a little funky little eddy there. And she threw it right up into that corner, and it was about 20 minutes goes by. That little cichlid came to the surface panicking, or just moving according to how you're looking at it, and a big snook came up and popped on it. Well, it must have hit it because it kind of stunned it just a little bit, so she decided, okay, wow, that was super cool, and she starts to reel it in, and it was like a 30-inch snook, follows it all the way up to the dock. She's fishing off the bow of the boat, but right. It came up and took another shot at it and then swam away, you know, so she missed the fish, but they'll eat them. And a couple of years ago, we were using them for tarpon bait up there by your house up there in the Harbor Heights area on the river, you know, and it's amazing how those fish work really well. But another gentleman was catching them and eating them. He couldn't believe how great they were. He said he couldn't tell the difference between the bluegill that he was catching and the Mayan cichlids that he was catching when he cooked them up. He said there was no difference in the two.
All right. Yeah, that to me is, you know, one of the most amazing things is we have such a unique variety of fish here in Charlotte Harbor, Southwest Florida. From in the saltwater, you have Mayan cichlids, you have tilapia, got armored catfish, you've got saltwater catfish. I mean, then let's go into the sand bream and the, you know, the sheephead and all this. There's just so many things that people aren't even talking about that are actually quality game fish that are here. Not the armored catfish, but the what did I do?
No, you haven't done anything. I was going to give the list of shows here before we end.
Yeah, let's do it. These are shows that Robert, RJ, and myself are producing and helping to bring out to you guys. We hope you're going to enjoy them.
Fishy Radio, every Friday from 2 to 3 p.m. If you're a woman and you fish, this is the show to listen to. If you're a guy, don't bother. God and Fishing on Sunday, 8:30 to 9 a.m. That's Pastor Donnie.
Pastor Donnie's the God part. I'm the fishing part.
We would assume that to be true. Cooking Fish, every Wednesday from 11 to 11:30. If you want to know how to cook fish, this is the show to do it. And if you already know how to cook fish, I guarantee you there's something on this show that you didn't know. And then my favorite, Southern Fried Living on Sunday, 11:30 to 12 o'clock.
And we've got a couple more. We've got Reptile Show coming out for you. We've got Barry's Tarpon World, which is a great just fishing show. I think you're going to like some of this program. We've got a lot of it coming. And I think... I didn't know. Do we got anything else?
I think that covers it.
Okay. So anyway, Fishing Frank here, Robert in the chair across from me, RJ over there. We got a whole bunch of guests, we got a whole bunch of shows coming out here at WKDW. Kind of just check them out. I think you're going to be really excited. Don't let the names fool you. They're fun. Just to ease my mind.